Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me for season 4 of the BIPOC Outside podcast. I'm Chris Cromwell, and today we're sitting down with Judy Kazuyama. Judy is a multi-sport athlete, an outdoor advocate, founder of Color the Trails and the Like We Film Festival. And today's conversation is a little different. So let's get into it, shall we? Judy, hello. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me again. Yeah. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. So for our listeners, this show's going to be a little bit different. Judy's been on before talking about her work with Color the Trails, and we're going to talk about that a bit. But when we kicked off this season, we highlighted how demographics in outdoor participation are shifting in positive ways. And that's due to a lot of the important work that's done by organizations like Judy's, like Color the Trails. It's paying off, but we also said how there's work left to be done. And there's some changes that need to be made in the industry. So the two of us talked about it after some events that have happened that some of you may or may not have heard about. And we wanted to talk about some of these broader industry problems that we're still seeing across the mainstream industry, about DEI work and the expertise it takes to do it. And with Judy's expertise, we're going to talk about some of the solutions so that those of you that want to do this work in the space avoid some of the pitfalls that some others are experiencing. Did I sum that up about right?
Yeah, I think you got it.
So there were a few problematic events, problematic statements that just as the ski season was kicking off, and there was a number of us that were talking about it offline. So yeah, let's start with AI work is not something you can just do. It's not just add BIPOC and stir. What sorts of expertise do you need to have to do this work right?
Yeah, I feel like for me, the way I honestly see DEI, I see as DEI is really dead in a sense that I think it's very problematic how a lot of people are throwing the term out there without pausing and reflecting and really truly reflecting what diversity, equity, and inclusion really means. Right. So I think a lot of us are just throwing the word out there because now there's a lot of funding, even though there's a lot of research showing like a lot of businesses are cutting, corporations are cutting a lot of diversity equity funding. There's a lot of research coming out. A lot of big corporations are cutting that funding, but there's still opportunity for a lot of people to get funding under the guise of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And for me, I started this work not because I thought there was money in it. Like when I started the work of Color the Trails in 2017, nobody cared. Nope. Nobody cared about diversity. The amount of pitches I threw out there, the amount of rejection I got, because it wasn't an interest and it wasn't a trend that was happening back in 2017. So I find like a lot of people, before you're coming into diversity equity work, you need to do your own, you have to actually have to have some kind of background in understanding the history, the politics, the intersectionality of all these things encompassing diversity equity. And it's not just based on your lived experience as a person of color, but it's also education behind those topics that come so that you can talk and not misinform. And most important of all, you need to remove your ego from it. This is not about you. And I think that's where I'm finding a lot of diversity equity work is coming from. It's becoming coming from a place of ego where people are like, I'm doing this to showcase like how diverse they are or how inclusive they are, instead of actually centering the communities that have been marginalized, that have been silenced, that have been cast aside in an industry that still doesn't see the value of our communities in those spaces, right? And especially the snow sports industry, where it's a very privileged space to be in, but it's also, it costs a lot of money. And there's still this bias that people like us can't afford to buy into that kind of like elitism. So therefore, what's the point of investing in us unless we're tokenizing a few selective people here and there and giving them that platform to seem like we're diverse? So for, I think for me, if you're going to be involved in this work, you need to do anti-Blackness training, which is like, I think the pivotal, most important aspect of diversity equity. You have to do anti-Blackness training because people not understanding how anti-Blackness is permeates into every aspect of things that we do because of white supremacy. And people don't want to acknowledge that. People just want to lump everybody's experiences together under the guise of diversity and inclusion, where I don't think we can lump everybody together. There's a unique experience as a Black person, the experiences when they engage with the outdoors. There's a different experience in terms of Indigenous folks being in the outdoors and reclaiming that space that they've always been part of. And then there's also a narrative for the BIPOC and people of color, especially how they engage with the outdoor and how they're perceived. So for me, it's like recognizing the differences and willing to work and bring that intersectionality into our work versus us just like throwing here and there the term diversity and inclusion or being selective who. And that's the one thing I've noticed about the ski industry or the snow sport industry is like, we find people who are semi-good and then we just want to elevate them and make like their story the whole story for the entire population. When in reality, that's not true, right?
Yep.
So yeah. So for me, if you're going to get into this work, put your egos aside, concentrate in the community and let the community lead versus you leading. You're just there to organize and collect those voices, collect those experiences to share out to the world. It's not about you. Like even the work that I do, half of the time, I don't even think it's about me. It's about what's right for the community that I'm representing. And am I representing them in a way that is actually advocating for them to take up space, for them to not feel excluded, for me to reduce the barriers so that they can access these things? Am I opening doors as I go or am I shutting them down as I go? And I think that's the most important thing is that I'm making sure like doors are open always behind me, but not everybody wants that door to be open behind them. They want to shut it so that other people don't have access to it. And for me, that's what I'm trying to dismantle and just being like, there's enough all of us to be here. We don't have to hold on to this scarcity mindset. That thing, the DEI kind of space has really forced us all to be like, I'm going to hoard all these sponsorship and all these opportunity for myself because I don't know if there's any more, right? Whereas I'm like, I operate in a place of abundance. I think there's more for everybody. The more of us are out there, the more safer, the more fun that we have. And yeah, so that's what I think where we're at.
It's important what you said about like the industry holding up one or two people. And now as we're evolving and more people are participating, we've got more and more BIPOC pro skiers or snowboarders are getting highlight on them, organizers in the space, but it seems to be these same faces that are getting pushed forward time and time again. And one, we're exhausting these people. And I feel this way. I don't know if you feel this way. I am not representative of the community. I have had access to these sports my whole life. I know the language, mm-hmm. the lingo. I've got the skis. I've got the clothes. I've been to the places. I feel comfortable in these spaces. I'm also a light-skinned person. So experience is also entirely different in that way. When you're continually putting the spotlight on folks that are already a part of the ski community, mm-hmm. you're going to miss the people who are trying to get into the community where their barriers are.
Yeah, I think that's like a very important thing. And I think that's why I think Color the Trails is unique in a sense that we provide access to somebody who's never skied before to people who are way more experienced. For me, the way I say, are we creating spaces with other people in mind? Right. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I create our events, I'm thinking of those who are missing at the table. Am I creating spaces for them to be able to come at the table and still participate and be their fully authentic self? Right. So I find like the industry, sadly, and that's why like I really pushing at tokenism. I personally, if I'm getting hired for something, I make sure and ensure that I'm bringing other people within the CTT community alongside with me so that I'm not, because I could be easily tokenized. Like I could just grow my own personal brand and not care about community at all. But I'm actually like taking a huge setback in some ways by making sure that I'm bringing other people's along. And a lot of people don't like the fact that I bring other people along. A lot of brands don't want to bring other people along because it's easier to support one person versus it is to support an entire community of people. Right. And for me, I don't want to be active participant in that where it's so individualistic. I'm not an individualistic. I come from a culture that's community based. So everything I'm going to do is going to be community based. I'm not really caring how much money I'm making. I'll figure out how to make money my other ways. But in the reality is like, how do I bring my experience or how do I utilize the spaces that's been offered to me to bring others along, right? Who wants to be on this journey? And sadly, I find like the industry does focus on people who've grown up skiing or snowboarding or doing all these things in the mountain, who feel comfortable, who feel okay to constantly be in a lot of white spaces. Not everybody feel comfortable that way, right? So for me, it's like, how are we being able to celebrate community spaces, affinity spaces that's designed to ensure that people's psychological and emotional safety are a priority and people feeling safe are a priority, where they want to ski with other people that look like them. And also we are, as you said earlier, we are making other people, the people who are constantly the face of the industry, we are exhausting them. And what is that? Because like social media could be a thing where we show all the highlights, all the beautiful things, but like, how are their mental health dealing with just being like the only one or one of the only ones in their spaces? Are they getting support that they need? Are they able to vocalize all those things? We don't know, right? Because like at the end of the day, I think we live in a capitalistic system where we're like, we gotta keep all these opportunities for ourselves and do all these things because the hustle culture has us believing that we need to move forward and we got to hustle and protect ourselves and protect our assets, right? So yeah, like, I don't know. The industry is, I think out of all the industry I work in, I find the snow industry to be one of the most toxic in terms of individualism and the cutthroat, like cutting people out. And I'm just like, I don't want to be part of that community. That's not what I'm all about.
Yeah, no, I see that. With the show, I walk a fine line because all these people I'm talking about that were exhausting are the people that I'm having come on the show. And I'm being fully cognizant of the fact that I'm just another ask in a full email box for time and trying to be so respectful of time and so appreciative when I get it as a gift. But it's wild to see the same voices over and over again. And I love those voices. A lot of them, I love those voices, but I want to hear other voices too.
And those voices deserve to be heard, right? Because I still don't think there's like a true representation when we look at the snow sport area. I still don't see those stories. Like most people who I know who are in this space has been skiing since I was a kid or like a long time. I started skiing when I was 30 years old. I'm 34. So like for me, it's like, I want to hear those stories. People who are coming in their 40s and learning how to ski or snowboard. Like those are the stories worthy of celebration too. Like just because I don't send it the biggest line, it doesn't mean like it takes away from the joy I experience for being outside on the snow. It doesn't mean like even as a consumer in the industry, it doesn't mean that I'm not spending money in the industry. I'm still spending money in the industry, right? But it's like, I feel like those voices who are the least are not being heard and stories are not being told unless you are doing the exceptional. And that's why, because like everything's based on trend or viral, going viral because of XYZ. And those what's marketing, that's what the marketing industry want, when in reality, it's trends come and go. But the community you build and sustain, stay loyal. And I think that's why brands and the industry really need to invest in. They need to invest in human capabilities versus just like the human exceptionalism, people who are exceptional here and there. Because sometimes I look at them like, yeah, it's cool you're doing that, but I don't feel like I want to put my life in that line to do what you're doing, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. I was really happy this year with the SIA participation report showing gains are being made in terms of Black, Hispanic, and they don't have Indigenous as a separate category, and I've made comments on that before, but with other racialized communities, other communities under the broad BIPOC umbrella, participation is increasing. And in my mind, and with my research, it's community-based effort that's making that happen, not the industry. And when we keep asking these community organizers such as yourself, these DEI experts, to continually do the work, and there has been so much work since 2020, even though it's starting to keel off, they're burning out. We know people who are, they're done.
Yeah, no, people are exhausted. Like, I know I'm in a community with a lot of leaders who are leading, and they are so done. They are so done. They are so done. And for me, I think that's like the sad part about it is like, instead of us investing in leadership and the potential in that leadership to like make sure that they don't experience burnout, we are sadly seeing them burning out. And because they're burning out, they can't sustain the community, right? So for me, it's like really sad to see that, to see a lot of organizations being like, hey, our funding ran out and it's hard to find funding. So therefore, we can't continue this, or we volunteer a lot of our time and energy. Therefore, we don't have any more to volunteer because we gotta the increase of rent, the increase of grocery, we gotta work and like take care of ourselves, right? And also like it's emotionally exhausting as a community leader because you're also getting, you're getting dragged so many things. And because a lot of people don't want to see you successful. So a lot of people is also like dragging you and bringing you down and really like disregarding your work and the effort that you're doing. And it just seems like you can't please anyone and people are burning out. And for me, that's really sad. And the reason, like even with Color the Trails, I know for a fact how many people we've gotten into skiing and snowboarding. And those are the numbers that I can be like, no, this is the amount of people who've never skied and now are skiing. And even like we just posted our ski program at Whistler last week, and already we have like 100 and something application come in, right? And for me, it's like, yeah, it's 100 each season. We're bringing anywhere between 120, 150 people who started skiing with us 3 years ago when we started this program, who are now progressing. Now they're on taking level 3 and 4 or level 4 and 5 with us. But that's because of the effort that we're doing to reaching our demographic. It's not the industry. And we're very thankful for the partnership with Whistler because it's made it very accessible through that partnership. But also they see the effort and they see the numbers and they're seeing people returning. Like when I started skiing, there was barely diversity on the Whistler Mountain. When I go, I see way more diversity. And I see a lot of people who have come through our program who are now purchasing 5-day pass or a season's pass and stuff like that. So there's this, like, I think, as I mentioned earlier, there's sadly this belief that the BIPOC community doesn't have the economic buying power, when in reality is like, we need to make it accessible so that people see the value and then they will invest. Like, who's going to invest $600 on lessons and a 1-day lesson to learn to ski and not even know if they like it or not? But if you make it accessible, they're going to decide, wow, I really like it. I want to continue, and then go from there. Right. So
exactly. And it's not to say, yes, BIPOC communities experience poverty at statistically higher rates than the white community. That is a reality. There's systemic reasons behind that. Not every person who is under the broader BIPOC umbrella experiences poverty. And there are literally millions, tens and hundreds of millions of us on Turtle Island.
Yes, exactly. No, it's exactly. But I think it's just a narrative. It paints all of us under the same umbrella. And I think that's a false narrative. And also looking at Canada's demographic and how we're moving demographically, like you also need to like diversify your marketing strategy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not going to get on my soapbox. There's one ad that just infuriates me, but I don't know what the number is for Canada. We're still waiting for a census to come out, but in 20, the U.S. is going to look like the global majority. Canada, I'm imagining it can't be too far behind or too far ahead. So really, if you're looking at it from a corporate perspective, your sustainability requires you to engage these communities.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Because I think when I first started the ski work, I did my own research and it was saying like for every baby boomer that retires from skiing, they need 3 millennials to fulfill that gap, right? And now with the cost of everything, I'm like, you're probably going to need more than 3 millennials to fulfill that gap. And who are the millennial? Who are the Gen Z? There's such a diverse demographic of people. So you have to like start investing in those communities and reaching out to those communities and creating and working with community grassroots organizations who are doing this work, I think is the best way of creating that marketplace, market force for people. So, but I think the industry is a little bit behind or they're lagging. And then we're not even taking into account like climate change and everything that's happening. As you can see this year, we had such a slow start of a season, barely no snow. So it's like, it's going to be interesting, I think, in the next 10 years to see where the industry end up with all these things, all these challenges that they're not willing to address right now.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And when we say the industry, we're speaking super broadly. That's not to say there are specific businesses in the industry that are doing the right thing. Resorts that are doing the right thing. There's a few brands that are doing the right thing, but they are the exception, not the rule.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And we love to celebrate the ones who are doing it right. And Whistler has been doing it right, working with you, working with Indigenous Life Sport Academy, others. Yeah. Another sort of pitfall of relying on the same voices over and over again is if you don't get that diversity of experience, say as an organizer, as opposed to a business in the industry, how are you ever truly going to create a space that's open and safe and welcoming? And I struggle with the safe space phrase because I like the phrase safe enough people are willing to take a risk on you.
Yeah. Can you try to rephrase that question? Because I'm just like trying to see how to answer that.
Okay, let's phrase it this way. Yeah. Let's look at your approach to it.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about, we're not just going to talk about this, guys. We're going to talk about some of the really cool things Judy has been doing since we last talked to her as well. One of them, color the slopes. What things do you put in place? What is your approach to making sure that is a safe enough space that the BIPOC community is willing to take a risk and get a flight and then drive to Revelstoke from either Kelowna or Calgary and spend hundreds of dollars to spend a weekend with strangers? Because they do, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I think one thing about Color the Trails is that we center out of most community. Like, we're like, this space is created for you. If you've never skied, that's no problem. Are you afraid to come here because you don't know anyone? Don't worry about it. Come. At the end of it, you're going to come back with like 10 friends that you're going to be friends with. And I think one of the best things is we allow community to give their own testimony about their experiences coming, for example, to Color the Slopes Summit, and then being like, please share with the broader community. Our videographers or photographers goes and find people and ask them questions. So it's not a question that we pre-decide. It's we let that creativity. And that's the thing, the cool thing about Color the Trails is we let artists be artists. We don't ask people, we don't have like, oh, let's meet. These are the questions we want you to ask people. It's like, no, you're the videographer. You're going to come spend time with the community. And then through that, you're going to be able to find people. And then like you ask some questions that you think are important because you too are part of this community. Like, and for us, it's very organic and it's very like community centered, community oriented. And the best part is like, we make it also affordable, right? So for us, it's like, you can try to do a 4-day ski trip and pay like over $2,000 and go by yourself easily.
Easy.
Or you can come and spend time in community. You're still paying less, but like your transportation is arranged. Here are the hotels that we're working with, and here's the code so that you're getting discount for booking through us, right? So we basically trip plan for everybody. Because I find like, so yeah, you just have to figure out your flight. But here from you, when you land to Kelowna Airport, there's a bus. Here are the two options. Buses that would take you and drive you all the way to Revelstoke. So you don't have to worry about transportation if you don't drive. Or if you want to drive with people, here's a carpool list of people who are coming.
Yeah.
Or you need a roommate. Oh, here are the people who are booked hotel and they're all looking for roommate and you can split the cost to make it more cheaper. So like we're being intentional of being like, hey, we're already doing the work for you. Like all you have to do is accept our invitation when we send it out to you and be like, yes, I'm coming. But because we've already set up for you. And I think it's very intimidating to try to plan to go somewhere by yourself. But because we foster this notion of community that is real, people see that and they experience that, I don't know, through social media, they're like, yeah, I'm going to try to take a chance on it and go. And then once they come, they're like, wow, I'm glad I came because I trusted my gut. And this is just like a very beautiful thing. And then we had one person come again this year that came last year. And our first Color the Slope and then our second Color the Slope. And then it was so funny. They were like, we're going to try to create a little blog for them to share their testimony. But they're like, oh, I tried a bunch of CTT events. And then one day you guys hosted dragon boating. And we're like, oh, okay. And it's like, yeah, I don't know why I signed up. I just did. And then I fell in love with dragon boating. So now I can't attend all of your events because now I've invested so much into dragon boating. I've won 3 races, with our group. Yeah. And then now I look forward to Color the Slope because this is like my luxury trip. Every year I'm saving for Color the Slope Summit because for me, I can't do everything else during the year that you guys are doing because I'm invested in this other activity that you guys got me into. But Color the Slope Summit is just, I look forward to it. I enjoyed it the year before and this year I enjoyed it too. And I'm looking forward to it. And for us, it's like us being able to like create spaces for people to come and discover their passion and go and thrive in that passion and find community in that passion. That's why I think that's what we're so intentional about. Like, how do we create space that are, as you're saying, safe enough for people to take that risk? And then through that risk, they figure out their potential and like things that they didn't think they would love. And now they're falling in love with and now investing their time and energy into. And for us, that's what we want to see. Like, I don't want Color the Trails to just be like a place where people just come year after year. I want them to come after year, but also find community outside of Color the Trails that piques their interest. If it's dragon boating, if it's sailing, if whatever it is, that they find that they have a community. And because we've worked with some of our organizers, they understand our value. Mm-hmm. And then those organizers continue to uphold those value to, because like all these spaces are hungry for people. They're hungry for diverse people. They're hungry for young people to join. Yeah. So for me, it's like just being very intentional and being very accommodating. And all of our leadership team, like oftentimes they get messages from people who are interested, but who are on the fence, they'll get on the phone call with them and be like, okay, what's making you nervous? What's making you anxious? Like, we can try our best to like give you our experience, how we've went. If you don't know anyone, at least me, you can always reach out to me during the event, right? That way there's a face that you recognize. You have my number. You can text me if you have any questions. So for us, we try to make it very personal with people to really help them feel that, to bring that nervousness down, to just help them experience what it means to be in community and to be in community in nature. And I see this as like a daunting thing.
One of the things that I noticed that really stuck out with me was how much intentionality went into the menus, which is something that I very rarely see in the spaces that I'm in, in the outdoor industry or in academia even. And I myself don't have any food restrictions, but two people very close to me do. One's cultural, one is health-wise. And they've always got like that one styrofoam plate covered in cellophane at the end of the table with their name scribbled on it. And throughout the entire weekend, like just the intentionality behind making sure no one felt excluded. Like, food is important. Yeah.
I think culturally, I think we're all foodies. So culturally, we're like food, right? Because like we all come from a culture where food is always like at the table where everybody can come and eat. And like you're always trying to take into consideration what can be in, what cannot be in. So I think for us, because we have such a diverse team in terms of what they also eat and what they can not eat. And that's, I think that's the important piece. It's like having diversity, a diverse team can pinpoint you the areas where you have your blind spots on. For us, it's like folks who are more like Sahara, for example, who like very halal, eats halal. It's like, okay, I'm going to handle the food menu, work with the resort to ensure that, because like a lot of these small resorts don't know what halal is or can't really figure out. So we're like, fish is fine. Vegetable, like making a good vegetable meal option, yes, is hot, also really, yeah, right? And like, and working with like the catering and just being like, this is what we mean when we're saying halal. Instead of you guys trying to Google what's halal or XYZ, like these are the options. These are what we can eat. And like, and then also like when we do our application and just asking people dietary restriction and just like, and trying our best and just being like, also, we also let people know it's like, this is a very small interior town, BC, so they may not have everything, but also you yourself be prepared to have something to help accommodate you if we can, but we'll do our best. Yeah. And I think that's just like really important and just like letting people know, because you, like you say, the event is like, we're coming and eating and celebrating. We have to have that, make sure that blind spot is like being taken care of when it comes to accommodating folks with food restriction. And then also like ensuring that we have mocktails for folks who don't drink, yes, you know, we don't center alcohol like in terms of our events, because we want to be we want to give people the option if they want to drink alcohol, but we also want to let people who don't drink have that options of not having to drink, right? And I found like a lot, especially when you're doing our door kind of sport, it really centers a lot on alcohol.
It
and
really does.
We really work to decenter alcohol from our event and just be like, when, if you want to buy alcohol, this there for you. Like, we have that option, but if you don't, it's totally okay. Here are all the mocktails that we can do for you, and really thinking about that. And I think that's why I think a lot of people feel like they can trust us, because we are all these things, like cultural things that people may not know because their team are not diverse. We know because our team are all very diverse. Like this year, one of our leaders added, like, if you're neurodivergent, if you want to bring your like exercise ball or something that you need to like to keep yourself, or like headphone to reduce sound, like it's okay to bring those and use those, right? It was sent an email to everybody, so everybody's aware. If it's somebody's wearing headphones, it's because like they're sensitive to sound, or somebody's holding on to something, it's just like to de-stress because there's a lot of stimulation happening during our event. So it's just like making those things, normalizing it throughout the whole planning event system, I think is like so essential in making people feel welcome.
Also, and this is something that like industry, pay attention. If someone comes to you with something, a course correction, course correct.
Don't be offended. I think a lot of people take it personal, but we, like with Color the Trails, we ask questions and ask people to accommodate us. Like, I don't care if you do it this way, it's not going to work for our community. So you need to, we're the one paying. So I need you to like accommodate to us and make sure that, because by you accommodating to us, it's also helping you as a business to learn how to be more accommodating to people who needs a different direction of doing things, because not all of us experience the outdoor the same way. So we have to be flexible and fluid in terms of how we're engaging with people coming in with all different abilities, right? So yeah, so for me, I think it's been an interesting journey, but some people take our feedback really well and some people don't. And I think being a Black-owned business, people are always going to see me as aggressive, as me coming forward and being too harsh or blah, blah, blah. But in reality, it's like, no, I have boundaries and I have a level of expectation in which you need to fulfill as well, because you also expected me to behave and be a certain way. And so far, all of our partners, especially even with Color the Slopes, the people that we've worked with, other businesses, the side businesses that we work outside the resort, they're so excited to have us time after time, because they're like, your group is so amazing. They're like, we can't wait to have you again next year, right? Because they're like, we love teaching your group. We love being with your community. And I think that's a testament of like how intentional we are about not just like the people we bring, but also the atmosphere that we bring, because like their coaches like love coaching us, love being in us. And they're like, oh, I wish we can coach you guys all, because like people are hungry and so ready to learn. And if you're an instructor, or if you're anybody, you want to teach people who are excited for those things.
Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit about funding, but first I'm going to just put out this note, because I know, and you know, but we're not going to tell you. Industry leaders, if you want to know what a financial benefit it was to Revelstoke and their partners for Color the Trails, reach out to your colleagues and they'll tell you what a benefit it is to host events like this.
Yeah. And especially if you're an interior small town where diversity is not big in your area, like bringing diverse people into your space, I think it's so great for businesses and it's so great for tourism. And I think that's what sometimes I find like a lot of tourism or a lot of resorts are not really seeing the value. It's like, there's so much capital, like there's like billions of dollars in capital of Black women just traveling alone, yeah. Right? So you need to tap into that and be like, we have the money, and it's just like, because the spaces haven't been open for us, so it makes it harder for us to engage in those spaces. But if you look at travel, like people are traveling, like traveling has gone up significantly post-COVID. People are engaging way more with the outdoor post-COVID. So it's like, you need to tap into these community, and especially grassroots communities who are doing the work and bringing you people. Like, all you have to do is support them in the marketing and like the accommodation, but they're doing the harder work of actually like selling your community, like marketing the tourism to your community, right? So
Yeah, absolutely. And as my dad likes to say, Black people will show up and show out.
That's so true.
So true. We see with some of the other DEI initiatives that are not being community led, and we're seeing more and more of them access what is becoming a smaller and smaller pool of funds for these activities, for these initiatives. We're not seeing transparency in where the money's going. And so I wanted to ask your opinion on the long-term impacts of that. When folks who aren't experts in community organizing, in building, who don't have diverse leadership teams, diverse marketing teams, all of the things that you need to create this sort of success, accessing this pool of funds and then failing, that's going to shrink that pool of funds even more as sponsors are going to stop supporting initiatives.
Oh, 100%. Like, we already see it post BLM where the pool of fund was there and now it's getting smaller and smaller to a point where a lot of things are being cut. And then to access that pool of funding, you need to know somebody in that, like, to be able to vouch for you, right? But for me, I think it's A, I don't blame people trying to use the system for their own benefit. I think it's the issue is a lot of these brands and funders don't take the time to research who they're funding.
And that was my follow-up question.
Yeah.
For the people out in the industry, brands who are like, we don't have the capacity to do this, so we want to support an organization that's doing the work. How do you vet an organization to make sure that they're actually doing the work?
Look at the leadership team. Who is leading these programs? Are there folks of color? Are Black women? Are they queer? Like, what are the target demographic are they targeting, right? Is there a diverse group of people, or is it just like elite folks coming together and being together and that's what they're marketing, right? So for me, I think, and then if you've already partnered with other community organizations over the years, ask them to be like, okay, who are other people in the community who are doing the work that you see? Because a lot of times some of the brand partners that I work with ask me this, and then I'm like, hey, I can testify this person's doing the work because I'm in relationship with them. I see them. They're doing amazing work. These are the people you should be investing in. And our community partners will go and invest in those people because I'm vouching for those people, right? And so I'm putting their name forward. I'm not going to put a name forward for random people. It's people who I know who are in community, who are doing the work, who are hustling and doing everything to make these spaces more accessible for other people versus people who are more interested in themselves. And like I said, the ego sense of being like, I did this, when in reality, it's like, so you don't do anything out of the year, but you're only running these two programs. Like, why is that? But yeah, I think funders need to be more and more careful, like research, interview, be like, I think you gain a lot by interviewing people and being like, I want to understand your passion, why you found this. Can you show us your deck? Like, look at kind of organizations' annual report, like how are they reporting their success or their failures or whatever. Like, do it that way, not just like trust in, hey, I'm a founder of this organization and therefore I need money. I'm like, that's great. But I feel like a lot of people use that for their advantage versus like for the community. So I think vetting and finding key leaders that you find that you think that are doing a fantastic job, and then reaching out to them to pull other people's name forward. And it's going to require time and effort, but I'd rather you be take the time and effort versus just like giving money to whomever and then not knowing if that money went anywhere else, right?
Protecting your investment, right? If you're if you are a brand or a resort or a service provider in the outdoor industry, we're not asking you to hand money out. We're asking you to invest.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why in Color the Trails, we say like we're staying away from the term sponsorship. We're like investing in community, because for us it's like what you're investing in is community. And we have the track record. Like, you can go on our social media. All of the content is created by us. We hire the creator from diverse background within the BIPOC background to create those content for us. So for us, it's like, you can see it right then and there if our work is intentional or not, if our community is intentional or not. And because you're also in the industry, why don't you ask some of our partners, because we named some of the partners that we work with, reach out to those partners and be like, how has it been working with Color the Trails? Are they a legit organization? What do you think of them? And have them testify on our behalf if you don't want to trust what we have to say right away. But like for me, it's like, it's always important to, you have connection to all these brands, just reach out to them and being like, how was it partnership with Color the Trails? How does it work? How get that kind of primary kind of like information from people in the industry that's doing the same work as you.
Yeah.
And I think the issue is also like, there's so much competition among brands or corporation that they don't talk to each other. And I think that's where this is, because you're like, you see each other's competition versus like seeing each other's resources as well. Like we can be in the same space, but we can also utilize and share resources and knowledge in terms of like, who are you guys partnering with? Why are you partnering with them? Are they great? Like, how has it been working with them? And that way you're getting insiders information as well to see like, are these organizations worth us investing in, right? Versus just like based on something that you heard from someone without even giving them a chance. Because like all the partners that we work with, they wouldn't be working with us if Color the Trails wasn't doing the work.
Absolutely. That's such a great articulation. I'd never really considered that. I love it when government organizations, brands, whomever, reach out through the show and ask me, oh, we're doing a project in this region. Who should I reach out to in the outdoor Indigenous community in that region? Or what organizations are doing this sort of work in that space? And when those things hit my desk, if I don't know, I will take the time to research it. Absolutely. And then I'll do things like call you and say, hey, have you worked with this person before? Because I want to recommend them for this, but I want to check if they're legit first. Like we're having these conversations, folks. But it's interesting that you said that, because I've never heard it articulated that way before. And it's important.
No, it's very important. And I think this is how we grow community and we build leadership and like ensure that we're investing in organizations that are actually building community versus just like the one-off kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That felt good to talk about. Let's shift gears a little bit. Tell me about Color the Trails. Listeners, you may not know this. I tore my MCL, so I didn't get to go this year and it was heartbreaking. But how was Color the Slopes? How was it? Tell me all about it.
Color the Slope was amazing. Again, it was a little bit stressful because the snow came very late, as you know. So we had to basically, I think it was like 9 months of planning. We had to replan in a week. Yes. But our team, honestly, they just did a fantastic job. We ended up doing other amazing trips. We did like dog sledding. Some folks went dog sledding for the first time, which they loved. We did snowmobiling, as well as like snowshoeing. And then the resort thankfully opened. And then we had such a wonderful lesson day where folks were on the slopes taking lesson and just enjoying times on the slopes. Everybody kept saying like they should book an extra day. Like next time we need to advise them to book like at least 2 extra days so they can just enjoy the resort after and enjoy the community after, which I think if we do plan another one or when we decide after taking a bit of a break, we include that in the itinerary, but it was just wonderful. And then we had such a wonderful amount of speakers come, all share their own very different perspective of their work and like their work in the outdoors and that. And then we concluded with having Peter White, who goes by Instagram handle Peter Not White, do a dance for us, Indigenous dance. And that was just a very beautiful moment. And it was a beautiful way of closing because Peter disclosed to the group that was the first time he was invited to dance in his own territory. And it was just like all of us were in tears because it was just like a very moving moment for the community to witness that and be in community with him and drummer Pavel. So it was just like really beautiful. It was a beautiful way for us to end the season or start the season. So yeah, like we're just super thankful for everybody who trusted us despite us having been like, hey, we've had to change a lot of things and people just still wanting to come. And it was really beautiful to hear that people like skiing and doing all these activity is secondary. We're coming because of the community. Yeah. And for us, that was what I think helped us feel a lot better because it was very stressful, but knowing that people were coming because of community.
Yeah, no, totally. Also, since you and I last talked on the air, you went to Culture Shifters. And now yes, you are involved with this organization. Tell us about Culture Shifters.
Yeah, Culture Shifter is started by, it's a Burton initiative started by Zeb Powell and Salema, who are out there who are just like working together to bring more diversity on the snow sport, especially snowboarding. So yeah, I had the honor of being invited to be a participant last April. And myself and Demisha Dennis from Brown Girl Outdoor World went together and spoke on a panel. And for me, I was sharing with Burton, for me, it was a very transformative experience, mainly just because that it allowed me as a community organizer to just go to an event and just be and be among other Black people, other Black organizers, other Black snowboarders who are way more advanced than me, because I'm still like new to the sports and snowboarding, be able to just be in community with each other. And I really love that. And I think for me, it just like gave me the strength to continue on with Color the Trails, because I think sometimes when you're a community organizer, you put yourself last because you're so focused on putting community first. So for me, for the first time to put myself first and go to this event and just take it all in and then be and listen to other people, how they're running their organizations and like the barriers that they're experiencing and like how we can be a support to one another, I think was just like really rewarding. And it's something that I'm just like very thankful for to have experienced.
Incredible. So what's next for Color the Trails? You guys have grown exponentially since we've last spoken, since we've let other people listen to us last speak. Tell the listeners like what the future holds. You've expanded.
Yes, we've expanded throughout Canada. So now we're in Ontario and Montreal. So I'm not sure at that time if those two chapters were available. So yeah. So Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, Ontario, and then Montreal, which has been really great. And what's next for us is honestly, is we're trying to basically run a lot more mentorship program to really help support our communities to get more involved in the sport, build their skills, build their capabilities in the skills, and be able to move forward. So we're looking forward to that. And then we have a few, we're not going to announce it yet, but we have a few new programs that we're hoping to launch in the spring to be able to go on a different avenue as well for Color the Trails. So we're really excited.
We'll watch this space. We'll make sure to push everything through our social media channels.
Yes. So we're excited for that. Yeah. And the team is growing as well. So it's just been really nice to have such a great supportive group of women of color who are just like understand the issue and like are working to like address those issues in within their own communities and leading their own communities, which I think it's why makes Color the Trails so special, is that folks have autonomy over their community in terms of what they want to focus on, activities that they want to grow. And I'm here to support them financially and find partners and sponsors to help make that dream into a reality. So I'm excited to see 2024 and what 2024 brings. And then later this month, we'll be announcing our annual report just so that our community can see the things that we've accomplished in the past year and a half. So
that transparency that we talked about.
Yes.
Oh, Judy, it's been so great to have you back. And this was such a good conversation to have and a great way to kick off the season. Topics that can be hard, but it shouldn't be hard. We should be able to sit in discomfort and learn lessons sometimes from things that we've done, sometimes from things that other people have done.
And I think like, if anything, we should always give each other grace to do these things and to have these conversations. Because it's not easy conversation, but if we come from a place of graciousness and a place of learning and wanting to learn, and I would say like, now that we know better, we do better by Maya Angelou. If we come into a space with those intentionality, I think it gives us the ability to be able to move forward in a more positive way. I know the world right now is a mess and we need problem solvers and we need community organizers who can come and speak peace and resistance and into this space and recognize that like it's hard conversation we need to have, but if we're not having it, that we're not growing as an industry or as people at all. And we can't be having that. You and I can't have this conversation 20 years from now. Like, we need to retire from this conversation.
Yeah.
So it's like, what are we working towards actually making this space so that we don't need to have this basic conversation, that like the conversation can emerge into something that is deeper and that is more healing than us trying to figure out how do we be inclusive and what are the steps. And I hope that in the future that the space is inclusive in its own right.
Yeah, that's the goal, right? For both of us to be able to retire and say,
yes,
look behind us and say, yeah, we did something.
Yeah, exactly.
Listeners, you're going to be able to find links for Color the Trails, for Culture Shifters, for the videos from the, well, I don't know, is the video synopsis out for Color the Trails 2.0 yet?
Not yet. The slopes, not yet. So I'm just checking in with our videographer. I think we should be getting it fairly soon. So
If it comes out in the couple of days before the show posts, we'll link it. Yeah. If not, we'll link last year's because it's an amazing video. You might even find yours truly in it somewhere. And I'm also going to add some resources to this one for how to do it right, because it's work we should all be doing.
Yep. It's going to take all of us, wherever we are in our door journey, for us to speak up and call people into conversation and try to help people understand that if we really are wanting diversity and inclusion, we got to do the work for it. It's not easy work, but you got to do it. Nothing that's good is easy.
That's absolutely true. Judy, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Chris.
And that is it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Links on where to find Judy and everything we talked about are available on the show notes at BIPOCOutside.com. This was an important conversation to have. And if you thought so too, don't hesitate to smash the like button. I hope you'll join us again for another episode of BIPOC Outside.